name is Griffin, and welcome to my podcast, Flight Sim Edge, where we discuss everything about the world of flight simulation, past, present, and, of course, the future. This is my second recording, and in my first recording, I thought that it might be a good idea to give my background. In other words, why should you listen to this guy's podcast? But I gotta tell you, after listening to it, after it was complete, I found it exceedingly boring. And I also found it a little bit self-aggrandizing, and I definitely didn't want that to be the tone of the podcast in any kind of a way. So I decided to trash that, it's in the old delete column, and start over again. And you know, when I started thinking about it, I realized that no matter who's talking about flight simulation or writing an article about flight simulation, there's always going to be another person that knows more about the subject than you do. Some guy that's rebuilding a 737 cockpit and is taking the shell of an actual airplane and maybe is putting in motion machinery to simulate actual flight. And, you know, I decided that what I want this podcast to be about is me, who has an absolute passion for flight simulation, reaching out to you, hopefully an audience members that could be 1 to 1,000 that have that same passion. And maybe have a similar point of view to myself. Maybe somebody's going to sit there and go, you know what? I think exactly the same way as this guy. And I didn't think anyone else out there did. So I've had a passion for flight simulation since a long time. I have two converging real interests, and that's flight simulation and computers. And I've been into computers since I was a little boy. My first computer was a Commodore Amiga, and my second computer was a TI-99. That was more of a hobby kind of thing because it was an open architecture kind of computer, and you could switch things around, and so I sort of liked that, the hardware aspect of it. And the reason why I went down the PC path versus the Apple path was flight simulators. What was my first flight simulator? It's hard to say. I know at that time there were simulators by MicroProse and Sublogic. I think at some point in time those companies merged. And I really was fascinated by flight simulation. How I was able to get exposed to it was that my second job, fresh out of high school, I worked at a little computer boutique. We built custom computers for predominantly two demographics. One was building business machines, and the other ones were the tech nerds, the cyberpunks, the guys that were into computer customization, hacking, you know, the gambit, running bulletin boards. So working at that store, I saw my first flight simulator, and the graphics were very crude, especially by the standards that I was used to on the Commodore Amiga, which its graphic capabilities blew the PC out of the water. And it had its own graphic user interface that was, in my opinion, was more advanced than Windows at that time. But the idea of having this sort of digital world where you could get in the cockpit of an airplane and fly to various locations and land at different airports was just absolutely fascinating to me. I'd been a aeronautical buff for a long time, and I just was absolutely smitten, and it went on from there. By the mid-90s, flight simulation had definitely made generational gaps. The graphics were much better. A cockpit was more like a cockpit, not just dials on a screen. The sound effects were much better compared to the buzzing that came out of the computer speakers in the early generations of flight simulation. And I was taking my computer interest to higher levels too. I wasn't exactly building systems at that time, but I was thumbing through, I don't know if you guys remember this, the huge magazine called Computer Shopper. And there were various companies. A matter of fact, most of the companies allowed you to, there were several companies that allowed you to pick the parts that you wanted. You could pick, you know, what CPU you wanted, what kind of storage devices you wanted, how you wanted to set them up, whether it was a straight configuration or a RAID configuration. And you could pick the graphics cards for your computer as well. And they would put it all together and put it in a box and send it to you. The big ones were Gateway. Those were the ones that were in the boxes that looked like cows. I don't know if you guys remember that. There was a few others that were out there as well. I don't remember if you could pick your motherboard. It seems to me that that was not an option. The motherboard was pretty much picked for you as far as the what CPU you wanted to use. But you could basically have a customized computer. Now, very few companies, I'll go out on a limb and say, I don't remember any, gave you a full gambit, going to Egghead and picking everything. You know, there would be one company that would have three or four different video cards, another company might have two or three different hardware solutions, and so on and so forth. But there wasn't one company that had all those options. And so, you know, you had to do your research and pick what you wanted in conjunction to everything else. And of course, you could pick the amount of RAM you wanted, which at that time was pretty expensive. You know, even in the times of RAM prices going up and down, I remember RAM being, constrained to the amount of RAM that I could choose by basically the price of the RAM. That's also when I started to add more peripherals. I wasn't flying via the keyboard and mouse. I started out with a fairly decent joystick, more advanced joystick, that had several programmable buttons, and you know, was pretty heavy. It wasn't a chintzy little light you know, kind of toy looking thing. It was a serious joystick for its time. If there were rudder pedals available, I didn't know it at the time. I forget exactly when rudder pedals started to show up, but I built. It was the first time that I had configured a computer. I'm not going to use the word built because it was built by the manufacturing company. But it was the first time I configured a computer with the sole purpose of being able to push the simulator. And at that time it was, Microsoft Flight Simulator. I think X-Plane, the first version of X-Plane, was shortly released after then. But at that time it was geared more towards Apple. You know, if you had a Macintosh, really X-Plane was the only flight simulator that basically you could get that was, you know, a fairly high-level simulator. They did have the PC version either at that time or shortly after that time, and I tried it out. I forgot how I got a copy of it or a demo of it, and I just hated the flight model. It was absolutely horrific. And so I flew a Microsoft Flight Simulator. I forget the first Microsoft Flight Simulator. I want to say 99, perhaps, but I'm not sure. And it's all a blur, folks. It's all a blur. That's when my interest in it as, basically one of the many interests that I had as a computer user started to turn into a dedicated hobby. So there we go. That's pretty much my background in the world of simulation, without pretense and and it kind of gives you guys a history of how I got into the hobby, which by no means makes me an expert. So fast forward to now. In 2016, I had actually dropped out of the hobby for a while. And in 2016, I decided I really wanted to get into the hobby again. The release of X-Plane 11 is what really motivated me to get back into it. X-Plane, I figured it by that time, its flight model must have improved. And when you looked at the visuals, there really wasn't anything, in my opinion, that was comparable out of the box. So I decided, the prepared 3D thing was just too ludicrous. It was $175 and you had to sign some sort of contract with Martin Marietta, Lockheed Martin, Lockheed Martin, I guess. And, it just sort of seemed ridiculous. And knowing that it was built ultimately on FX-10, which, was pretty long in the tooth, just had really no appeal to me. I went to a computer store that did have X-Plane 11 preloaded, and I got to fool around with it for 4 or 5 minutes, and it was actually the demo, because the beta version wasn't out yet, I don't think. Maybe it was, I'm not sure. And it was going to come to market, within the next 3 to 6 months. So that's when I decided that I was going to build a computer, which this would have been probably my third build, where I was going to, you know, do everything, you know, myself, and picked a really beefy motherboard because I knew that the 8th gen chips were going to eventually evolve into the 9th gen chips, and I wanted to make sure that I had a motherboard that would be ready for the 9th gen processors when they came out. And built the rig to push the sim. That was the whole reason why I built it. I knew my wife was going to use it for perhaps digital photography and some other things, but by now, most true flight simulators users, the true hobbyists, knew that if your computer can push the sim, it can just about do anything else. If you got a simulator that's running decent frames and decent amount of graphics, you know, with the sliders more to the right than to the left, it was not going to have a problem doing anything else. And as I got back into the world of flight simulation, I was very pleased. I had a dedicated yoke. I use a CH Products Clips yoke, and it's a pretty advanced yoke. It even has a built-in throttle. It has built-in rudder. Instead of rudder pedals, you have little flaps on the side of the yoke. It's almost like a paddle shifter in a way. And I was limited by space, just didn't have a room to be dedicated to a flight simulator. We have a 3-bedroom apartment, but we have 2 teenage girls, and you know, my wife didn't want the flight simulator to be in the bedroom. I do my flying at night. That would have been disturbing for her anyway. Predominantly at night, I should say. And so, you know, we had to build it into the living room, and that's where it was going to be placed. And I didn't have a lot of space for rudder pedals and stuff like that, so I thought the rudder paddles, let's just call them that, was a great solution to that issue. Of course, it had the built-in throttle and fuel mixture and RPMs, and I didn't need a separate unit for that. And that all made it very convenient, everything in one package. At that time, the build had 16 gigabytes of 3200 RAM. It had the i7, but not the K chip, because the K chip ran hot. And I had a small water cooler. The water cooler is actually built into the case. It's a really cool setup by GamerStorm. I had a 1080 Ti, have a 1080 Ti video card, and it was doing pretty good. So that was my system in a nutshell, basically, and a 1440p, or sometimes called a 2K monitor. That was overclocked. My video card is overclocked, and my monitor is overclocked. I believe it's 160 hertz, 27 inches, so it's a decent size, and it's a pretty good setup. So flying X-Plane 11 out of the box is pretty good. You know, it's not bad. But I was also a bit disappointed as I came into the flight simulator world again, because peripheral aircraft and scenery and stuff like that, you still had to download it from a website in a zip file and, you know, make a backup copy of your aircraft file and then unzip it. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And it just seemed really crude. You know, I'm also a gamer, although that's not really my passion. And you can buy, you know, extra content for games like Halo or a host of others. And it's point and click. You know, you pay the product, you know, you go to a page, there's a button there, you click the button, and your extra content, whether it's, you know, extra horses and armor for, or race cars for Forza, whatever the case may be, you know, or extra weapons for your favorite first-person shooter. It's very simple. It's a professional product that you buy, and, you know, I was just blown away that you could pay up to $70 for aircraft for your flight simulator, and you had to sit there and manually download it and unzip it and back up your files and pick the folder that it was in, and some third-party stuff, it's way more complex than that. You gotta add a certain code in, and you gotta put the file in with this kind of, you know, installer, and I was watching Pilot Q8, and he was talking about, I believe the show is Q8 Pilot on YouTube, actually, and he's a great guy. I think he's has a marvelous channel, and I've learned a lot throughout the years watching his channel, and I think he's a really sweet person, humble person, and does a great job at what he does. But he was talking about installing some kind of cloud enhancement, you know, makes the clouds look better in X-Plane 11. And, you know, and he says, if you want to install this, it's really not that hard. Follow my steps. And the video is over 20 minutes long. And I mean, you have to download like 5 different kinds of files. You got to put them in the right area. You got to put one folder in the other folder that you downloaded, and then you got to erase a folder once that happens, and it's crazy. I mean, only in flight simulation is this part of the culture. I've been on various forums, and I'm like, what is going on here? You know, coding an installer, it's probably 2 lines of code. And, you know, there, in my opinion, there should be like a general installer, you know, something like X installer 1. And, you know, it's just 2 lines of code that, whether you're doing shareware or whether it's free or whether it's a paid for product, you know, you put those 2 lines of code in, and, you know, there's a graphic interface of some kind, and you click it, and it just all goes, you know, and it just goes. I mean, if people had to do that when they bought a new car for Forza, or a new weapon, or a new set of armor, I mean, how many gamers would do that? You know, I understand this is a hobby, and there's things that you have to do to make your sim, you know, run better and run smoother. But in my opinion, this is ridiculous. It's only in the flight simulation world where this, and we're talking 20 years. I mean, I had not flown a simulator for 10 years, and when I got back into the simulation world, I thought all of that would be over. You know, there would be super easy to download and it'd be no issue or whatever. You know, I got a plane from Coronado, and it took me 2 days to get the thing to work. And I had to email the company, and they had to tell me that, and I had to copy my the X-Plane 11 generates like this kind of ongoing log, and you know, you can copy and paste the log, and I had to send them the log, and then they sent me back, and I had to do, you know, even though I installed it according to the directions exactly as described, I still had to wait from a technician in Coronado to tell me how to do something, and even then it didn't work, but it gave me a clue of what was wrong, and I took a hunch and installed it in a certain way that finally allowed the aircraft to run. And guess what? The aircraft still had bugs. Can you imagine a Forza guy that spends $12 or maybe $6 on a new car and the brakes stuck, or it didn't shift out of third gear, or if you hit the car in a certain way, it started to go in reverse automatically and you couldn't get out of that unless you stopped the program and reloaded the vehicle again. I mean, they'd be up in arms. They'd be like, dude, what is this? I want my damn money back. And when I went to the forums and sort of vented my displeasure, I mean, complete and total vitriol. Well, then buy a video game system, and you know, if you can't figure out how to unzip a file, then maybe flight simulation shouldn't be for you. And I can figure it out. Everything that I've purchased and everything that I've downloaded, I've gotten to work, unless there were bugs in it, you know, that didn't allow it to work, but it had nothing to do with the process of downloading it. It's the fact that I have to do it that is absolutely asinine. It's the fact that I have to sit there for 10 or 15 minutes even and figure out how to get it to work and make a backup copy of my air files, airplane files, every time I do it, because it could corrupt something. Just to be safe, go ahead and make a separate file. And so you got to do that every time you download a plane. It's stupidity. And, you know, it's just ridiculous, and it's completely and totally unnecessary. I'm sure that writing an installer, a general installer, that all software, I mean, because it's all going to one place, it's all going to one program, so, you know, it has nothing to do with drivers or, you know, how much RAM you have or, you know, what video card you're using, blah, 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 blah. It either can install and work an X-Plane 11 or it can't, you know. And so it's ridiculous, and it's laziness, in my opinion. It's laziness within the industry. It's writing a program and you know, zipping it in a zip file and go, well, they'll figure it out, you know. that's all and good when it comes to free software. I mean, you got to take a few bumps in the road, but even that, I think. Excuse me there. Even that is unnecessary, but the fact that you have to do it for payware is just mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. And I think there's a day coming down the road where that's not going to be the case. But having said that, I enjoyed X-Plane 11 for the most part for almost 2 years. But even though it was a much more advanced sim compared to what was available on the market, and even though the graphics, you know, were impressive, there were still parts of the simulator to me that looked and acted, if that's the right word, ran and in a way that I thought was a bit dated. And so that's going to lead us to the next show, where we talk about what's coming down the road. The invisible elephant in the room, Flight Simulator 2020. And we're going to talk about that product in our next program. And I'm really going to talk about not just the simulator itself. I'm sure that most of you have seen the video clips if you're not even involved on getting the updates and stuff. But I'm going to talk about how this simulator is going to change the whole culture, in my opinion, of flight simulation. It's not only a generational leap, it's also a generational arrival. And what I mean by that is that in many ways it's how it's supposed to work. This is how it should have worked for a few years now. So I feel like, yes, it's a huge advancement in the future, but I also feel like it's catching up to the times as well. And so we're going to get more in depth in all of that. And it's going to be probably a little bit extra long program. Maybe I'll break it up into two programs, but stick around for it, and we're going to have lots of fun. So I appreciate you listening to this first episode of Flight Sim Edge, and I look forward to the next show. Everyone take care.